Hey, what's up, sinners and choosers? Welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe, here to navigate you through yet another podcast. My guest today is Buck Ball, who, if you're in the Los Angeles storytelling community, you know who he is. He's kind of wild. He's a little rough around the edges. And I think Buck would probably be the first to tell you he's not a role model, and yet he is somebody I learned a lot from. And it was honestly through learning what he knows about storytelling that I really spurned on a whole another creative side of me that I didn't even know. I didn't even know I could tell stories, to be honest. I did stand up for a long time, and I would try a couple stories here and there, and I was always bad at it. But then when I ran into the book, he just taught me how to unlock what was already inside. He was actually on the live Choose Your Own Religion back in August, and he agreed to let me play his story on here. So here's a story from Buck Ball. All right, our final storyteller of the evening is here. He's been here the whole time, but he's going to be up here now. Please give it up for the great Buck Ball.
Keep it going for Joe. Yeah, and everybody that shared a story. At one time, I was very religious. I was brought up in a religious household. My parents taught and still teach Sunday school to kids. It has always been a very, very, very prominent factor in my upbringing. That being said, no one is more fun than preachers' daughters. Like, yeah, there we go. Absolutely. Thank you specifically. And I will drift in and out of this story because I'm suffering from a spider bite. On my foot. Oh, yeah, I was recently at the ER, like, 6 hours ago. So, whatever, it's me, not you. And you're going to feel a lot better about me telling you that once you hear this story. So I fought back and forth really, really hard with my religion and with my religious beliefs and everything like that because growing up, my sister had primary sclerosing cholangitis, which rarely affects women, but it's what killed Walter Payton. And my sister had this growing up. And we were both, like, in the youth group heavy, heavy. Like, she taught sermons and was very devout. And to watch her struggle with all of this, like, it really made me question so much about religion and, like, how could God, like, just watch this shit go by? And then I got, like, puberty. And the thing was like, oh, sex, no sex. Like, don't do it. You're going to go to hell. You're going to go to hell. Like, whatever it is. And eventually I got hush-fucked. And I was like, okay, well, you know, if God can just let this happen, it's fine. And then the more and more I would date women, they were like virgins in the church. Not my choice. But I eventually dated like 3 preachers' daughters. And this was like the final one. And I remember being like, no, like actually being a decent human being about it. But I lived, yeah, I know. You won't hear me say that often. So we had met in Orlando, Florida at Disney World, and she was finishing up her last year at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. So we'd fly back and forth to see each other, and we had birthdays within 6 days of each other. So I flew to see her for our birthday, kind of like a co-op thing, and it's going great, but I had just decided in my own mind, I was like, you know what, I'm done with religion. Like, I've had enough, because the last time I was there, I laughed at a joke on SNL, which is hilarious in itself. Weekend Update, they made a joke about Tennessee teaching evolution, but also, or not teaching evolution, but also cooking roadkill. And I laughed. I laughed hard, and then her parents judged me super hard for it. So I was like, all right, whatever. I'm over it. If this is what it is, it's what it is. And then I was there with her in Tuscaloosa. And Tuscaloosa on a weekend is fucking wild. Like, all rules are off when a bar is open till 5 a.m. in Alabama. And then you wake up to do tailgating the next day, and it was homecoming for Alabama, and Mississippi State, my hometown, was playing them. And I remember talking it over and her being like, I want to give myself to you. And that's a huge moment because I had had sex before because I'm going to hell, obviously. At least the food's warm. And I remember her like pleading with me. I mean, you go to hell for the company, heaven for the climate. So I remember, I don't have time for this. So I remember us being in her bed in her apartment and her being like, I want to do this. I want to share myself with you. I want to give this to you. And I was like, no, I don't think this is right just yet. And she convinced me because obviously I was 21. And we did, and we made love, and like we were together for a long time. And I just remember having that back and forth of being like, no, you can't feel bad about this. Like, you've already decided that religion is not a part of your life. Like, don't, like, you can't get in your head. And we spent the weekend out, and Mississippi State won in Tuscaloosa. It was fucking awesome. I got kicked out of the game. Go Dogs. But on the flight back, like, I remember being super apprehensive about everything that happened that weekend and being like, oh, I feel bad. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't believe in God anymore. Like, obviously, I just deflowered this woman. I went on to propose to her, so it's fine. Because God knows I love heartbreak. And I hate, the only thing that I hate more than religion is flying. The only thing that I hate more than flying is pilots. Like, God damn it, dude, save the jokes for when we land. And my uncle, my mom's brother was a pilot, and he was a real shitbird. Not, like, hard pass. And I'm on this Delta flight from Birmingham into Orlando, and it's, like, a two-engine plane. There's only 27 seats on this Delta flight. And I remember thinking, like, oh, God, I'm not excited about this at all. Like, I've just given up God. I've just taken this woman's virginity. And I'm starting stand-up comedy, so, like, everything's against me. I was bad at all of them. And this guy walks down the aisle, and he comes and sits next to me and goes, don't worry, I'm a pilot. We got this. We have the good seats. We're in the back. It's just like a roller coaster. You know what I mean? That's where all the good seats are, is in the back. And I'm like, well, first of all, I'm not a huge fan of roller coasters. And I don't want this comparison. And so we're sitting down, and like I said, I just started stand-up comedy, and I'm reading a Marx Brothers biography, which is hilarious. You should absolutely do it. It's called Why Buy a Duck. And so we take off, and we're getting close, and the guy's talking me up the whole time. He's like, oh, yeah, you feel the bumps. Like, we get all the movement back here. Like, these are the good seats, this, that, and the other. And I fucking hate this dude. Like, I really do not like him. And I'm thinking internally the whole time, like, what have I done? Like, what is my life now? And we're getting closer and closer to the airport. And we feel every bump because there's only two engines on this plane, much less 27 seats. And we're getting close. And then the plane starts to, like, really tilt. Like, the wind is carrying this plane, and it's making, like, 45 degrees turns. And I look over, and like, I'm freaking out because I've only flown 5 times at this point. Like I said, the only thing I hate more than flying is pilots, and they're both involved. And so the plane is, like, really shaking, and the pilot sitting next to me looks over, and he goes, yeah, see, now we're in the roller coaster thing. And it's shaking a little bit, and this is before everything I ever did was inebriated. So, like, I'm still sober and thinking about my life and all this shit that I've done in Tuscaloosa, Alabama for once. And I'm just like, oh, just read. It's fine. Like, oh, you know, Night at the Opera. Okay, cool. How did this come about? And then the plane starts to jump like this. And the pilot goes, oh, it's just turbulence. Don't worry about it. Think about it just like the roller coaster. We have the good seats. And then the actual pilot comes on the overhead and goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, I would like everybody to please sit down and buckle up. Apparently there's a tornado on the tarmac, or on the tarmac, and we don't have enough gas to actually fly around, so we're going to have to chase it off the tarmac." Like, even on a Southwest flight, that's a shitty joke. And so the pilot sitting next to me is like, "Oh, don't worry about it. It's a thing that happens all the time." And about that moment, the plane literally, like, tilts 90 degrees. And he, like, grips on to the handles and the seat rest and everything. He's like, "Oh, shit." That's the last thing you ever want to hear a pilot say is, "Oh, shit." And I'm thinking to myself, like, "Oh, God, this virgin sacrifice. Like, this is what it is. Like, I fucked around. I did this wrong. Like, just don't go back to God. Don't go back to God. What do you have left?" And then I'm just holding on to this Marx Brothers autobiography. And I'm like, "Just pray to comedy. Just pray to comedy. Oh, Groucho, Chico, Harpo, Zeppo. Groucho, Chico, Harpo, Zeppo. Don't let me die here. I don't want this." And, like, it's really shaking now. And, like, it's going sideways up and down, which is not how turbulence works. And I look over next to me, and this shit bird who's, like, confirmed with me, "Oh, it's just like a roller coaster," is white-knuckled on the armrest. And he's just saying a prayer to himself silently. And I'm like, "No, don't go back. Don't go back. Like, you made these choices. Don't go back to God now. This is what he wants." And, like, we're shaking up and down. And then the air mat, like, the mask drop. And then you can hear everybody on this plane. Because remember, it's coming from Birmingham, Alabama. On a Sunday night. So everybody is, like, praying to everything and everyone they've ever known. Like, it's literally that moment where you're, come to Jesus. And I'm trying as hard as I can not to. Like, I don't want to go back because I'm a stubborn asshole, but also, like, I've just sold myself to hell. Like, I've been to the crossroads at midnight. Like, I've done the Robert Johnson shit. Like, I sold my soul. Like, it's gone. Like, no refunds. And it's shaking and moving, and I put the mask on. And I'm holding on to this Marx Brothers autobiography. And I'm like, "Groucho, Chico, Harpo, Zeppo. Groucho, Chico, Harpo, Zeppo. Please don't let this be. Please don't let this be. Don't make me go back to God." And, like, we skip as we land. Like, skip, like a stone. And once we land, like, get actually firm on the ground, they go over the loudspeaker, like, "Just get out of here. Forget your bags. Just go, just go, just go." And they take us underneath Orlando's airport, and we're in this shelter with everybody else, just, like, shaking, and they put the blankets on us, and, like, they're trying to confirm with everybody, like, "You're okay, we can go get your stuff later," like, "Well, this, that, and the other," like, "It's fine, don't worry about it." I'm like, "I'm not worried about shit, I just don't want to be out there again." Like, I've been in tornadoes before. That's, like, one of the few things that my town is famous for, is Hurricane Katrina and tornadoes. And I know what hunts you. And I go and I get my stuff eventually, and, like, everything is fine. And my friend comes to pick me up, and Harrison, I love this man. He works for St. Jude now because he is a saint. And he comes and picks me up in this old Cadillac, like, this Cutlass. And I get in the car, and he has a blunt waiting for me. Like, at the airport, he has a blunt waiting. And I get in the car and put my bags in the back, and he was like, "Whoa, wow, you look whiter than ever." And I told him what happened, and he was like, "Oh, well, here, hit this and forget about it." And that was the last thing that I ever did sober. And I haven't been back to God yet. So thank y'all.
And so that's Buck. Now, I do need to say this. Now, I know Buck is a bit of an enigma sometimes, and he's got outlaw blood, as he himself would say. And it's weird because, you know, as a lot of you know, I'm going into seminary and I'm going to be a minister. And so as part of going into ministry, I feel this pressure to have more reverence. And it's a shift from what I'm used to, frankly, as a comedian and being able to kind of say whatever I want. There's and everything's irreverent. And, you know, that the spirit of this podcast was never about being overly reverent, because we tend to have a certain idea of what reverence even looks like, what holiness looks like. Like that holiness has to mean, well, you're quiet and you're not laughing. And reverent means you're silent and stern and serious, and you're not saying dirty words, and you're making it all sound good at the end. Well, sometimes reverence can be painful, I think. You know, I think spirituality can be dirty and grounded, and it actually ends up feeling more real and relatable to me. And I love Buck, but he's not like a minister. He's not like a pastor. But that's not the point of the show. This point of the show is to show what other people's experiences are with religion, how they've come to understand it. Let them say their side of the story, where they came from, what they're thinking about, how they think about spirituality. And that will always have a place on the show. If we want to spiritually grow, I think it's really important that we're all given the space to honestly articulate where we really are, even if where we are looks like it's backwards as someone else. And all that being said, Buck is genuinely one of the most entertaining storytellers I've ever seen. And I feel lucky to have met him and have learned from him. I was really happy he's on my live show. If you want to see another more of these live show, they're live storytelling shows. I also play music, oftentimes Atlanta's more set. It's on the first Sunday of every month. The next one will be on October 7th at 6:30 p.m. at the Clubhouse, which is in Los Feliz. We always have a great time. The next one will be October 7th. And then the one after that will be, November 4th after that. And I would absolutely love to see you out at either one of them. And for the official event page and the location and all that, you can go on the Facebook page for Choose Your Own Religion. And we'll always have the events posted there. And if you like this show, you can always find more of the old episodes on the website, or you can just scroll down your whatever feed you're looking at this on your Google Play or iTunes or Stitcher or, you know, whatever weird thing you're using. I don't know what you guys are all using. And if you like it, tell a friend about it. Share it. Maybe somebody is like, oh my God, I know exactly who that reminds me of. If the spirit moves you, just that's how you can help out. And so, without further ado, thank you for listening. Thank you for being who you are. Here's Buck Ball.
Allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
I'm trying to think if that was the year Huck Finn was published or not, but it was around that time. I know it was close, because I know Twain went out, and Twain was alive and in Europe at that time, and I believe close by. I wish they would have met each other.
Yeah. See, I always imagined that Mark Twain would be your, like, biggest idol.
He is. I mean, he is. I've always dreamed of, like, I've always played around with the idea. I love the notion of, like, fictitious history.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to write the novel of where, like, Mark Twain is this rogue abolitionist.
Yeah.
And he just uses, like, the speaking and oration tour to go around and free slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's him and Ulysses S. Grant. Because mm-hmm. they were best friends.
Really?
Yeah. Twain wrote Ulysses S. Grant's biography.
Wow.
Yeah. They were big friends. Mark Twain said the only person that Mark Twain couldn't follow was himself. But that being said, Ulysses S. Grant is the best orator that the earth has ever known.
Really?
And they both died, like, poor. They both had people just, like, take full advantage of them. Like, they both would just buy any damn thing. Mark Twain bought into the first, like, he wanted fixed print, like, type and he lost like $100,000 in 1875 or 1880, something like that. Lost $100,000.
In 1880 money.
In 1880 money.
Yeah.
In 1880 money.
Yeah.
He lost $100,000 on fixed print because he was trying to create a computer.
Wow.
He's like, I'm tired of goddamn writing. He's like, I wanted just to be able to like type it up and print it. Wait, and it was a typewriter before everything else.
Before the typewriter?
Yeah.
When did the typewriter come around?
He also, like, Alexander Graham Bell took, like, maybe the same amount of money from him.
Really?
Yeah. Like, or no, maybe Alexander Graham Bell took that from Ulysses S. Grant. But, oh, yeah, they got swindled by, like, the greats.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really, it's unreal. Like, he had to keep being marked. Mark Twain wasn't even allowed at his daughter's wedding because she said, if Mark Twain shows up, I don't want him. I want Samuel Langhorne Clements. My name is Clara Clements. I don't want Samuel. I don't want Mark Twain there. I want Samuel Langhorne Clements to walk me down the aisle. And this was in the year, like the year and a half or whatever, that Mark Twain was reportedly dead.
Wow.
Like, yeah, there's so much fun shit. Like, there's a missing year and a half of Mark Twain.
And then he came back?
Yeah. Like, he was just like, hey, I'm not dead.
So, like, totally Huck Finn'd everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Tom Sawyer is the one that did that.
Yeah.
Huck Finn just ran away. Tom Sawyer is the one that watched his own funeral.
Right. So, his own. Eerily, did he write this after? Did he write Tom Sawyer?
No. No, this is like...
Before that.
He was writing his own autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
In this like missing year and a half is what I believe to be true. And then he gave it to his publisher and he was like, you can't print this until 100 years after I'm dead.
Wow.
And so that was in his will. And they had it. And it's been sitting at the Smithsonian. And
really?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, he in his time was the most celebrated author ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like... Father of American literature,
right?
By not even giving a shit about punctuation and like actually using how people talk. Yeah, he's a father of American literature.
Right.
I believe that missing year and a half is him writing his autobiography.
It was a lot easier to go missing back then, to be fair. You could just, I mean, really,
simpler times.
I mean, really, you could just like, I'm just gonna pick a cabin. I don't tell anybody where, like, where it is, and that's pretty much it. It's game over.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it would like, I think you. It was so apropos how you nailed that. It was so much easier to go missing back then.
I mean, I feel like people just went missing all the time, and they're just like, oh, they just showed up later, and like, where were you? Oh, you know, I was in the Appalachian Mountains for a couple years. No big deal. Didn't feel like sending anybody any letters.
Yeah, like. You could disappear yourself. And I am somebody who is really great at disappearing themselves.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I'm just, like...
We're going, by the way.
We are?
We'll go ahead and start.
Okay. Emphatically, yay.
Yeah.
yeah, like, I'm really good at disappearing. Like, in three different instances, there's a blank year of my life.
Really?
Where people just, like, didn't know.
Huh.
Like, oh, like, the internet's made it a lot easier to track that, of course, because,
right.
Like, now I can't keep my hands to myself. I've got to always text or type or take a photo.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, like, there's like, a lot of my life where it's just like, oh, well, Buck's gone.
Yeah. What would happen? What would cause these disappearances?
I would just move, or, like, I get done with people, and I just disappear, and it's like, okay, well... It was fun while it lasted.
I mean, I get the idea. I don't know if this is what you were going through, but I've gone through many rebirths, so to speak, and you know, this realization that you're checking out my Calvin and Hobbes book now. Got distracted. I've gone through many rebirths where I've wanted to change my identity in the sense that, well, sometimes more literally, like the name I'm known by, but. Also, like, you know, I'm not, you know, going from, like, good Christian to, like, well, no, I'm a stand-up comic now. And then from stand-up comic to be like, that's not really all I am. I'm, like, a podcast. You know, I keep wanting to, like, resisting a box I put myself into.
Yeah, I mean, like, and that's exactly it for me as well. I mean, I think it's just natural for... somebody with a creative thought process to ever want to evolve.
And to like know the limits of, or to feel the limits of a fixed identity or like a fixed, you know, like whatever concept somebody has of you, or just realizing that like, oh, I'm a human being that like could have gone, my life could have gone so many different ways, why not go a different way? You know, like, it feels so confining, any kind of box you, like, I feel like I put myself in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, no truer words do I believe in. But just in general, like, you keep finding new things to do, like, to ever want to change. But it's not so much change. It's, like, learn. The thing that I dealt with really, really heavily moving out here was, like, because I grew up Buck Ball from Mississippi. Like, who the fuck wants to be Buck Ball from Mississippi? I can swear on here, right?
Yeah,
because, like,
course.
We were running hot, and I just didn't know.
No,
I have awful mouth. I have good manners, awful mouth.
no, swearing is totally fine.
Okay. Fucking great. so, the thing that I always said, like, growing up is, like, oh, I hated being Buck Ball. I hated being Buck Ball. I'd go to soccer camps, or I'd go and, like, meet new people, and it's like, because I never got an opportunity to be Charles Ball, because, like, what kid named Charles do you want to hang out with? But I was Buck, and, you know, like, I became Buck Ball just by proxy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get called something enough, you're going to become that. And I think that's something that a lot of times, like, human thought process and, you know, especially, like I said, a creative thought process is you're going to want to change, and you're going to want to grow and, like, learn and be something new and different. And I kept saying the moment, like, oh, moment I turn 18, I'm going to leave Mississippi and I'm going to become Charles Ball. And I did. I went to Atlanta, and, like, I played soccer at a junior college and was good and had fun. And then, you know, I missed being Buck Ball because, like, I was still Buck Ball. Just a rose by any other name is still, yeah, a rose. LOL. It'll still cut you.
This may sound like a silly question, but why not Chuck Ball?
See, like, because that felt
right
so
there.
Close.
It's so close.
It felt so close that it was like, you know, I'm just changing a syllable.
Yeah.
You know, like, just stay a Buck, if that was the case. And, like, you know,
And how did you get the nickname Buck? I've never heard. I don't know any other Bucks.
From birth, man. Like, everybody's like, oh, Buck Ball, that's a great name. What's Buck short for? And they always want to try and guess. And I'm like, you're never going to guess. And, like, oh, well, then what's
it's
it
like
short for?
Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah, exactly. Like, except for I don't have any talents to teach you.
Or didn't he, like, kidnap a baby or something in Rumpelstiltskin?
He gets the baby.
Right.
Unless she can find out his name, which is Rumpelstiltskin.
So you don't have any baby to...
No, I haven't promised anybody their firstborn. I also haven't taught anybody how to weave straw into gold. So that being said, like, yeah, I just always wanted... something different. And when I came out here to Los Angeles, I was like, oh, okay, I'll start off as Charles Ball. And I did, and I spent, like, the first year as Charles Ball, and, like, Charles Ball got the shit kicked out of him. Like, I had my first failed fiance leave me for another man, and just all this other stuff. And I was like, god damn, like, I just want to go back to being Buck.
Yeah.
And now I have, like, one or two people that know me from the first year that are my best friends, that are truly great, and they have a hard time calling me Buck, which is hilarious. But they still call me Charles. Like, unless you're signing a check, I don't want you to call me Charles.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. Just because, like, I the thing looking back on it is I fought and I bled and I cried and I did all this shit to be Buck Ball just to survive. And then I was gonna, like, completely disenfranchise my struggle and what I'd been through just to be somebody new. And you can do that, and that's totally fine. But for me, it was like, oh, even when I wanted to be Charles Ball, I was still Buck. And that's the thing that, going back, like how you're saying, like, oh, you know, I went from being, like, a cleaned up Christian and religious, and I did that same thing. You and I had a very shared youth, maybe not exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that we're probably more than likely going to talk about later with storytelling is experiences more than examples. And that was the thing, is, like, you saying, oh, well, I'm not just one thing. And you and I still, once again, in entertainment or performing, you and I still have shared the same, like, a lot of similar paths. And the thing that I try and really incorporate into everything is, like, learned experience. You and I were talking about that a couple of, like, maybe a month ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. Learned experience. Like, you learn from something, you grow from it, and then you're able to share it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, oh, I don't do stand-up anymore, but I still have that mentality.
Right, right.
I don't do improv anymore, but I still have that mentality and, like, that thought process and everything. Like, those wheels in the machine are still spinning.
What do you still have from improv?
Oh God!
And you went all the way up. I had no idea that you were telling me this a while ago. I hope this isn't privileged information, but you made like a UCB Herald team there for a while.
Yeah, I mean, like I love improv. I think it's great. What about improv? Do I still use every fucking thing I ever learned? Wow. There's not a moment. There's not a thought that comes through my mind that isn't processed through my improv brain first.
Wow.
My comedy brain. Like stand up, and I guess pride myself as like a decent storyteller. But everything in my stories is either stand up oriented or improv oriented. Like that is the number one thing. Is it's comedy brain first.
Mm-hmm.
Because even comedy, and this is something that I love that probably hurts me the most, is no matter what you're doing, your comedy brain is your best brain.
Hmm.
Like it might make a lot of bad decisions, and I understand that because it's like, oh, it'll be funny in the future, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But your comedy brain makes you relatable because you're thinking about every single angle.
Mm, yeah.
Contextualizing
it.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, because the way I would tell a joke to you sitting on your couch is different from how I would tell a joke to you in a bar. Mm-hmm. Is different from how I would tell a joke to you from the stage. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. And that's the thing is, like, it all kind of revolves around the joke. And even the absolute best thing about comedy and humor is that sometimes it's sad.
Yes. Yes.
Like, okay, my favorite joke. I mean, I have two favorite jokes. My favorite joke, I guess, my favorite joke to tell, and I don't tell it anymore because I'm not 11, is what did the ghost say to the bee? And then you pinch the person's nipple and you say, boo, bee. That's my favorite joke. It's hilarious. Anytime I do like a comedy show and somebody's like, tell me a joke at a bar, that's what you get. That's what you get. If you ever ask me to tell you a joke, that's what you get. Sexual harassment. That's your fault. Like, it's, you know what? You asked for this. I did not come up to you and do this. This is not a pickup line. This is not anything else. I got it. I can clean up after myself. I just made a mess.
No, it's fine.
America.
These coasters are not as potent as I thought they were.
Well, they're great. Don't sell yourself short.
They were, you know, they're from Brevard, North Carolina, some random thrift store that had...
Do you say Brevard? I say Brevard.
Brevard? I feel like most people say Brevard.
Yeah? Okay, well, I'm also trash from Mississippi, so like...
Brevard, that's like pecan pie.
Yeah, well, okay.
No, we say pecan.
Yeah, pecan.
Yeah,
okay,
pecan.
So Brevard?
It's Brevard. Brevard, as far as I... Well, we also pecan. We say Appalachian Mountains and Brevard, North Carolina.
See, I do Appalachian.
Oh, Appalachian's wrong, man.
Well, I know.
I hate to tell you, but Appalachian's wrong.
You got the North Cackalacka blood. I don't. I've just been up there. But anyway, so, sorry. I get distracted a lot. I'm also drinking vodka out of a pint glass.
We're doing great, yeah.
You are. I'm here.
And I'm not drinking vodka, to be clear.
Yeah, no, he's not.
But we're both doing great.
Yeah, thank you. But my favorite joke, my favorite joke that I rarely share with anybody, because it is my favorite joke, and that's one of those things, like, with comedy, you have to put shields up with what you can and can't laugh at. And because, mm-hmm. like, even on stage or not, like, you have to put shields up at what you can and can't laugh at and what you can and can't cry at. My favorite joke, that being said, is a man walks in, and there's two different, there's a million different versions because there's no such thing as an original joke, but we'll say this specifically to me. Man walks into a bar, as they often do. And he sits down and orders a pint glass full of vodka, if you will. And and he sits down and he starts to drink it and he starts to cry. And the bartender comes back and he's like, hey, what's wrong, man? He's like, I've never seen you in before. And you come in and, you know, you order this big glass of vodka and you just sit down and you cry into it and you look at it. He's like, what's wrong? There's a lot of great things going on. And the guy says, I'm just so sad. All the time. I can't sleep. I have nightmares. I wake up crying. I wake up screaming. I just feel empty. I feel like nothing that I do ever works. And the guy looks at him and he's like, oh, hey. The bartender looks at the guy and he says, hey, you know, it's okay. I know what you need. The circus is in town. They have this great clown. His name is Pagliacci.
You gotta go see Pagliacci. Pagliacci is the best ever. Everybody loves Pagliacci. He's like, I tell you what, the round's on me, and I'll buy your ticket. We'll see you, like, let's go see Pagliacci. And the guy cries even harder, and the bartender comes over, and he pours him another drink, and he says, what's wrong? Like, what's wrong? And the guy takes a huge swig, and he goes, you don't understand. I am Pagliacci.
Mm, yeah.
And, like, and that's it. And that's, like, that's the joke, is because however you see it, like, you know, and the other interpretation is a therapist office, but I don't want to do that right now. But, like, yeah, but that's the thing. And that is a joke.
Right.
People bill that as a joke.
I mean, it is kind of funny.
I mean, it's hilarious. But, like, for you to think that, you would have to know, like, how sad, like, the sad clown. There's nothing more poetic than the sad clown.
Yeah.
Like, everybody feels that, because we either smile because we can't cry,
mm-hmm.
or we cry because we can't smile.
Yeah.
Like, and nary the two shall meet. And that's also another great thing, is sometimes you can cry so hard that you laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Just at the sheer, you know, emotion of it. And the same thing being said, like, you can laugh so hard that you cry.
Yeah.
Like, hysterically. Like, it, no two other emotions, like, run as parallel, mm-hmm. as laughing and crying, or laughter and, I guess, sadness.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely true for me and my, when I was doing stand-up, and that's actually what led me into storytelling, was I was, I mean, I think a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people who saw me on stage would just see how, like, sad and depressed I was a lot of times. And I think what was why I might be probably a better storyteller than I am a stand-up, because I feel much more licensed to, like, sit in sadness and validate my sadness and not blow it off. Or now, that has its own problems too, in terms of, like, sitting too much in it. You
boy
know.
Howdy.
But there's but I mean, and that's why, I mean, so I several months ago I got my badger tattoo, which is I learned it's it kind of became my spirit animal, so to speak, my animal totem that I work with. And that's because I learned through this book right here, which has a ton of different spirit animals and stuff, and, like, the history of, like how animals are used in various mythologies, mostly Native American. But the history of the badger is that, and I was just flipping through this randomly. I didn't know what I had never thought twice about badgers in my life. Didn't care about Wisconsin. Didn't, you know, the honey badger video was funny, whatever, but, like, that was it.
It was hilarious.
It was great. But, like, I wasn't like, oh, yeah, that's me. That's honey badger's me. You know, I had nothing like that. But then I was flipping through that book.
Honey Badger don't give a fuck.
Right. Honey Badger didn't give a fuck about me, and I didn't give a fuck about Honey Badger.
Yeah, as I'd say, Quinn don't give a fuck.
But, and so I was reading, and the badger, turns out the badger is the storytelling animal, because the badger lives in the earth. He gets his food in the earth. He hears the stories of the earth, and then he takes all these stories in, and then he retells his own. And apparently, the badger also sometimes has trouble relating to other animals. I don't know. I mean, like, the honey badger, he's not the most friendly animal sometimes.
He don't give a fuck.
I mean, yeah, he's kind of an ornery guy sometimes. If you catch him, on the wrong day, you might be like, why is that badger such an asshole to me right now? And, but the badger doesn't realize that's what they're being. And then, but they were saying, like, that's how the badger relates to other people, is through telling stories. Now, granted, there's a bit of all of us that does that. To a degree. I mean, that's what that was, like, the original form of human communication, was sitting around fire, telling stories without words about, like, the stuff we did that day, the animal we killed, or trying to demonstrate how we did it. You know, if that was the first story, was like, hey, I killed that animal with this giant stick or whatever it was, but that still is a story right there.
It happened, yeah.
Granted, I mean, not a very great, like, it's not a super compelling story.
You didn't hear it. Okay, first of all, I'm sure the guy telling it would be super pissed. Or the woman. if for you to come along and be like, oh yeah, this, that, and that. Yeah, you can't define a story like that.
I'm sorry, it's a great story.
You had to be there.
It was moving.
Okay, that's the whole point of story. You had to be there. Like, that's the relatability of it, badger.
That's the asshole badger in me.
Yeah, see, like, literally, you just called the shot.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, and sometimes I do this. You literally just shat on the birth of art.
The birth of what I loved. I mean, storytelling.
Yeah. No. But please, do tell.
But for some reason, it's like a lot of people don't think they're good storytellers. I think every human's a natural storyteller. It's just, and what I loved about you, I've told you this, I hope, before, but I'll tell it to you again in case I haven't, just how impactful.
You have it in recording. You have this down.
Just how, you know, impactful you were for me, and especially with specifically to, let's say, storytelling for the sake of performance, just refining and finding my storytelling voice and being able to pull great stories out of me that I didn't realize were there the whole time, you know, and then also being able to go through, like, since then, going through life and being able to find out, like, find stories. And now that has its own weird, like, pathology to it too, of like trying to make invent stories.
I'm sorry for that. Like, it has fucked me up so hard because, like, you were asking me, and I do appreciate the compliment. Thank you, Joe. That does mean a lot. You mean a lot to
me, man.
In essence, but like, it was there the whole time. The whole thing is like, and thank you. But yeah, the thought process of like how I taught you how to introduce yourself to everything, you are fucked. Because like, because that's me. Like, you're like, oh, what's your thought process? Like, how do you keep creating or growing and learning? Man, my mind is a cruel and fickle mistress. But that being said, like, when I open it up, and that's the same thing with like how you're talking about you being so disconnected and depressed on stage doing stand-up. And that was one of the, the level one class, like the Y'all Know Me class. What did you come away with? Like, woe is me, Joe is me.
Right. But that was what you said. That was my identity, was woe is me, Joe is me. Which is, I did not enjoy hearing that. Like, nobody wants to be like, oh, great, I'm seen as somebody who just is a self-victim all the time, who sees themselves as a victim all the time.
No, it was not that at all. That was just because, like, I try and rhyme everything because I love to rhyme. Like, rhyming and alliteration, like, for somebody as uneducated as I am, I love, like, grammar ploys.
Well, you got some great turns of phrase, for sure.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Now I put you on the spot. You felt like you had to have one there. And,
oh, yeah. No, I definitely did not. And you'll probably hear at least umpteen of them. I think I've said emphatically yay, like, 14 times. But that's the thing is, and thank you, especially because I've seen you progress as a storyteller and performer has been really infectious to not only you, whether you know it or not, you have influenced a lot of people just by your support and by how, I sound so articulate right now. How just open and vulnerable you are. That's where the woe is me, Joe is me thing came from. You were never a victim. Well, you were
any more than we all are.
Yeah,
in our
you were a victim of love.
A victim and a villain.
Yeah, well, I mean,
just as equal.
Same. I mean, victim, villain, visitor. You got to play one of them. but that's the thing is like your vulnerability was what was keeping you back from stand up. But it's what's really kind of opened so many doors for storytelling.
Yeah.
Because
thank you, man.
I mean, I didn't do shit. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for letting me watch your story. And that's the thing is what storytelling is because exactly what you're saying. Like, nah, I mean, okay, so I have to be a shithead at least 22 hours of the day, and this is going to be one of those hours. Not everybody can tell a story. Everybody has a story.
Mm-hmm.
I agree to that, and that's the thing is because what we were saying earlier about like similarities in our lives, everybody goes through a lot of shit that probably ain't cool, probably ain't fun, and everybody goes through something that's awesome. Like, everybody has a best and worst, and when you share that, it might not be the same exact things. Like I was saying, oh, there's four different versions of a joke. There's no such thing as an original story. Like, too late, hot plate, you missed it. It was that guy talking about hitting something with a stick that Joe butchered. That guy told an original story. He was the first person to tell an original story, and then Joe just came in and bulldozed it over. So what's the point of originality or art? But that's the thing, is you share these experiences, and all of a sudden you're not alone. Like, for even one moment, and I have the hardest problem with this, is there's... And Florence Welch has my heart forever, and Tegan, my girlfriend, the love of my life, knows this. But she has my heart. And the thing that I have the most trouble with is there's a story, a song that she sings, and like the chorus of it is, because it's so easy to sing it to a crowd, but it's so hard to tell you my love. Like, would you believe me if I told you what I'd done? Would you forgive me if I told you what I'd done? Because it's so easy to sing it to a crowd, but it's so hard to say it to you, my love.
Yeah.
And that's like, I've become this entity, like old Buck. Old Buck, oh, everybody knows old Buck. Like, oh man, what scrapes did old Buck get into tonight? You know, like, oh, everybody, accept your collect calls, Buck's all alone. Like, somebody probably went to jail. Like, you know, everybody knows old Buck. Y'all know me. And that's the thing, is like, I share that because I go through that, but I go through that because I live that. And what I go through and what I endure, like, saying it on stage to 300, 400, 500, 1,000, like, whatever, however many people I'm lucky enough, four people.
Mm-hmm.
Four people. It can be the people I brought, my friends.
Right.
I'm still going to tell a story a different way than I ever have before, and I'm still going to make it relatable. Same thing how I was saying, oh, the way I tell a joke to Joe on the couch is different from how I tell a joke to Joe on the bar. It's different how I tell a joke to Joe from the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but when you tell a story on stage, or just in general, you're relating your life because it's something you want to share. And it's not abstract. Like, you can't just bust out a guitar at a party. I tried that in college. It doesn't work.
Yeah,
you
I tried that too.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you can't just, like, start running hot with your stand-up act. Like, you can't just bust open a monologue. You can't just start, I mean, you can start painting. That's how painting works. But, that's the thing, that storytelling, there's no place that storytelling doesn't work as long as you know what to do. And, like, the notion that it's not about you, it's about sharing an experience. Yeah, you have to be the lead, but it's about making it relatable and being heard. Even if people are listening to you, they still feel heard,
mm-hmm.
because they went through something similar. Like how we were talking about growing up, like your father was a pastor. My parents teach Sunday school. I don't know if you knew that about me.
Mm. I think I've heard you mention that a couple times. But
I went to church Easter Sunday this year. I went home, surprised my mom. I thought I was going to burn up on re-entry. Didn't happen. But, like, religion was a huge part of my youth and mm-hmm. growth, technically. And that's, you talk about, I love how you just shat all over that dude's story about killing an animal with a stick. Have you ever killed an animal with a stick? You know how hard that is? Bo Jackson killed a pig with a rock one time, and it made a book. Like, Bo Jackson found out he was an incredible athlete when he went out into the field one day and just threw rocks at a wild boar until he killed it.
All right, my ancient forefather who did the miraculous act of killing a cougar with a stick.
And a cougar at that! You're talking about a big cat! You're talking about a big cat! That's elusive!
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
See how now you're getting more specific and you're digging yourself a well?
Yep.
Like the badger.
Yep.
And that's a great thing, too. But, yeah, anytime you tell a story, the thing that hopefully I taught Joe, which it seems like I do, is the way that you tell a story is like the way you would tell it to your three best friends sitting on a couch, like where you just come in from either McDonald's or the night out or like whatever mm-hmm. it was. But you come in fresh off this experience, and then you share it, and either they were with you or they're with you telling the story. And I mean, choose your own religion. God, I mean, Lord have mercy. What is the Bible, if not one of the greatest stories ever told?
Right.
The, like,
and a collection of lots of stories into one massive story.
Absolutely. And the same thing is it follows like archetypes and like it plays out into a great story because there's some cool shit that happens in any religious tradition, literature, whatever it is. Like they all follow the same plot lines. My dad has been wrong on so many occasions, but never about this. And the thing that he taught me at an early age when I didn't even want to listen to him, he said, there's only three ways to tell a story. It's mythology, religion, or Shakespeare.
That's it.
He's like, yeah, there's no other three. And he knew what he was doing. Like, I really, I do admire the man can edit. The man can edit. Mm-hmm. He was a newspaper like chief editor for a long time.
Oh, wow.
And my sister has a journalism degree. My dad has a journalism degree.
Uh-huh.
And my mom's a nurse, so I was born ready to listen to people. But all I wanted to do was talk.
Old buck.
And that's the thing. Totally me. But that's the great thing about stories is they're so much more than that. They're not abstract. Like, it's tactile.
Yeah.
And the Bible and Quran and, like, everything, they all follow kind of that same plot line of, like, growth but helping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's sacrifice in order to learn.
Yeah, or trying to, like, impart, if not wisdom, or just trying to tell other people, like, this is... You know, this is how it happened for me. This is what, you know, this is either happened for me or this is how there's a certain lesson to be gleaned from the way this person did it or the way this person is saying. Or even, you know, even the idea of a parable. What's a parable story? You know, it's a fictitious story, granted, but it still is a story because that's how we understand. You know, that's why I'm saying it's the oldest form of education is through story.
Like when Derek killed that cougar with a stick.
Right. Right.
We're going to call him Derek now because we never met.
I mean, that's how you learn. You're like, all right, well, let's try to repeat that story. That story worked for them, you know? And so, yeah. And, you know, this is also why I can't, like, fault people who are, like, well, I can fault them for other reasons, but, like, people who are evangelical or, like, missionaries or something, you know, they're most of the time they're saying, like, this is what happened to me. This is the transformation I went through. You know, they also might be like, they're also telling the story of like, here's a story of what happened to Jesus. This is the story of what happened to so-and-so. And then this is also how it's changed my life or whatever it is, you know?
Absolutely. And that's the thing is like, and absolutely, Joe, and you and I have talked about this at length on several occasions. And I'm so glad that you had me on this podcast and like you wanted to talk to me about this because we had spoke briefly on my couch about when you share stories and the effect that it has, like that is like it is religion. Because like, I mean, how many people you know have ever met Jesus? I'm not saying anything negative, like whatever, like I'm not trying
not
to call
many.
Not many? Okay, cool. So we're gonna play it on the slow end of the ratio. But I hear stories about him. He seems like a pretty fucking awesome dude.
Yeah.
And, like, he did a lot of good for a lot of people, and he hung out with some roughnecks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like...
Willingly, gladly.
Gladly! Like, wash their feet. Shit like that.
Yeah.
I still, like, based on the teachings of the Bible, I think the Bible is great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm white and Christian from the South, so, like, that's me. But, like, I think Jesus was great. I think he was super cool. Like, he did a lot of really neat shit. And, like, I mean, he turned over a table full of gold. Like, he had a damn statue hit by lightning. Like, what's more outlaw blood than that shit? Lord have mercy. And that's the thing, is, like, it's great because, like, he was just like, oh, what? Oh, you're a prostitute? Oh, there's no such thing as a dishonorable job, just a dishonorable way to do it. Let's hang out. What's your name? Mary Magdalene? Cool. You got some feet I can wash? Get in here. And like, and then he would just heal people, like blind people, like lepers. He would just be like, all right, so I got, you know, wake up at 8, got to go down to the well, got to bless this water, heal some people, do all this cool shit. And then it's like, oh, and then, you know, the night time's for me. I got to go out with my boys. You know, like the disciples roll through around 8, like sundown. We go and kick some dust up. Like I turn over a market.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and there's some cool shit in there. Like there really is. I think that people get carried away with stuff, but people get carried away with everything. I mean, for me, and I really hate this quote, but like religion is a drug and people abuse drugs.
Yeah.
Like it's something that people like, I wish a lot more people would be like, oh, that Jesus dude was cool. But like, you know, I have my own opinions. He gave us free will. Mm-hmm. That's what he died for, right? Like, dang, he didn't die, so he'd be like, okay, everybody, just, like, hypnotize.
Right, or else he would just hypnotize.
Yeah,
right.
He did, or else he would, like, he had that power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I mean, shit, he was born on Christmas.
Get out of here.
Okay, I will. But no, like, that's the thing is, you know, extremists, but people don't understand, like, extremists, like, the dude that killed John Lennon was a fan.
I actually didn't know that.
He's a fan.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of times, like, you see shit like that, and it's like, oh, if I can't have him, nobody will. Or if I can't have them, nobody will. And it's like, God, settle down. Like, I don't want Jesus. Like, I'm not going to invite him over to dinner. It might be cool. I mean, it'd be free drinks, but, like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know that I would, but he's... I'd listen to him talk.
Yeah. And what you're saying about religion as a drug too, I mean, it's one person's drug is another person's medicine, right? You know, and sometimes, and just as drugs can be abused, I don't know what that means.
It means I'm pointing to my nose as hard as I can because it means on the nose.
Oh, okay.
I could not agree more.
Yeah. Thank you, Beth. But like, you know, but also we can, and to be clear, not the same medicine is for everybody, and not every medicine can be abused. Also, analogies only have a certain amount of utility, so we can't stretch every analogy into being a perfect representation of reality.
Also, I need to take my medicine. So thank you for reminding me.
You need to right now?
Yeah. No, I'm just...
I mean, you can right
now. I mean, that's the timer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, you can. If we can take it's a fine. quick
it's
pause
fine.
If you need to.
It's fine. Just let me turn this off. I'll
right.
get it.
All right.
Oh. God, Lord have mercy.
All right, what was that?
No, I'm just...
Okay, so yes, religion, I think, can be a quote-unquote drug to people, but that one person's drug, another person's medicine. So in a lot of ways, I don't think there's anything wrong with needing, let's say, an external system, an external thing outside of you in order to heal yourself, in order to make yourself a more thriving human being. So in that sense... Sure, why religion maybe is a drug, but maybe some people need drugs to be normal, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I could not agree more. And I think drugs are great. I mean, if you remember the first part of this conversation, I'm drinking vodka out of a pint glass.
Right. Well, and I'm certainly not opposed to psychedelic substances myself.
Yeah.
But, and you know, and I mean, storytelling, I think that's what's so powerful. I mean, why is it even... Why is it the primary form of communication, even for like, when you want to like have empathy for somebody, when you want to feel heard and seen, you tell them your story. You say like, well, this is what happened to me. This is like my point of view. This is because I went through this, that made me feel this way. That caused me to do this. And I took this action because I was feeling this. I was taught to be, you know, we're telling our stories. And then it's through, I mean, I could not possibly tell you how many times I've heard stories in my life, because it's happened every day of my life that I've heard somebody's story and it's healed me in some way, or it's changed my mind in some way, or, you know, and it goes the other way too, in that we judge people based on their stories too. If we're not, you know, if we've been taught to judge people, we'll say like, oh, that story is not my story. Let me judge the shit out of that. You know, that's not great, obviously, but
yeah, I mean, and absolutely, you know, glass houses and shit like that. But the thing that I love, that I've also seen you witness, and I know that my life, I barely know anything, is when you tell a story on stage, because it's different than any other form of art. And even every other form of art mimics storytelling. Because, like, you think about, oh, who are your favorite artists? Okay, me specifically. Oh, I like Van Gogh a lot. I was talking to Joe about watching a Van Gogh thing earlier. And every painting like everything that you use, you're using it to tell a story. Like even as abstract as you are, as Steve Martin doing stand up or Gilda Radner, God, Gilda Radner, they're still telling a story whether you know it or not. And that's the great thing about it is like, it's something that is driven by passion.
Well, and you know, film and television, right?
Yeah,
all stories, and they're all. I think Roger Ebert said something. I can't remember the quote enough to butcher it, so that's good. So I'll paraphrase what he was saying, which was like that. The one of the most beautiful parts of film and television is its ability to be like an empathy engine, and that it is through watching film we learn about the world, we learn about other people who had a different experience than us, and then that's how we find our common humanity together.
Yeah, the quote that I was looking for that I stumbled upon because I got lost in thought and a pint of vodka. The thing that I've seen people talk to you is like, oh, when you tell a story on stage or whatever, you showcase a piece of your art that you're passionate about, I guarantee every time somebody's going to come up to you after, at least one person, at least, and say, hey, thank you. Thank you for either being brave enough to share that. My brother, my sister, and my mom, I went through that. Maybe not exactly, but we went through that. The same thing, how there's no such thing as an original story. Even, and that's not a bad thing. Like, you're talking about how the story is always something that kind of binds us. Math is the universal language, right? Because numbers don't lie, whatever, like, if we're using that. Story and language is planetary. Like, it doesn't matter whatever region you're from. It doesn't matter if you don't speak English, like me. Like, I'm using myself as an example. I don't speak English.
You speak Mississippi.
Yeah, I do. I speak Southern to a degree. But, like, if I could, I could share my life and my other experiences with somebody from Asia.
Yeah.
And as long as, like, we can communicate what happened, they'll be like, oh, yeah. I went through something like that, too. Or like, oh, you remind me of my brother. Like, how many times have you heard shit like that?
Well, it's like we translate films, you know. And we don't have, or there's such a thing as silent films, you know, things that don't have any words, but yet they have stories to it, you know, because there's so many things that transcend your specific language, your specific culture, or whatever.
Yeah,
That being said, I don't watch foreign films. But
okay, we'll fix that in post.
We'll fix that one in post too. I also wanted to say I mean, everybody wants to be original. What does every artist want to be original? And that's what we're talking about. And yet there is nothing truly original. But what does that search for originality originate? It originates in ego, I think, which is like, I want to be different and distinct from everything. I want to have something that wholly came out of me and no one else. I mean, I'll tell you my own experience starting off in stand-up was like wanting to break all the rules, wanting to be totally original, be like, I can do it myself, essentially. I'm such a genius. I'm so like a unique flower. This is old 22-year-old me or whatever. Being like, I'm so special. I'm so this, I'm so that I don't need to learn from the greats. I mean, I tried to an extent, but I can also be like, I can break the rules. I know what I'm doing. Of course I didn't. Of course I bombed all the time. Of course I learned the delicious meaning of hubris over the course of 5 years, seven, whatever, however, 30 years now, but to be fair. But also, you know, so conversely, the idea that if we give up this thirst for originality, this ego thirst, this art, like, you know what I'm saying? If we get that up, we realize that the converse is so much more beautiful, which is what we're talking about, which is the interconnected nature of everything. And that's what Buddhism talks about, too.
Yeah, I mean, is it Buddhism that talks about the river and whether to be the leaf or the stone?
I haven't heard that anywhere, so sure, it can be.
The thing is, like, I mean, and yes, I wholeheartedly agree, because I went through the same thing. It's like, oh, I got to be the next new thing, or I got to be blah, 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 blah. It's not, and I think the thing that I struggled the most with as an and I hate this word, an artist. I'm going to say creative individual because I don't like calling myself an artist. It's fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. I'm stupid. Everybody always wants to be original, but the only people that ever became the great originals were just individuals.
And they were individuals who did... It's not even so much originality, it's new combinations.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They didn't, like, that's what we all love, is a new combination.
Yeah, like, I mean, even if you look at, like, oh, the people that redefine stuff, I'm going to keep going back to Vincent van Gogh and Steve Martin a lot, but...
Like Dan Brown and Da Vinci Code.
God damn it.
People who redefine stuff.
You redefine
literature.
I actually have read that entire trilogy.
Is it good? I've never read it. I've never seen the movies either. I'm talking shit on something I haven't seen.
Once again, like David killing that cougar with the stick.
I thought it was Derek.
Derek, whatever.
How dare you?
Who remembers Derek?
our ancient forefather Derek? Who doesn't remember Derek? Come on.
You're right. That's my fault. God. But yeah, like, oh, and I lost my train of thought laughing at that.
I'm sorry. I totally distracted you. Da Vinci Code, Van Gogh.
No, you're perfect.
No, Van Gogh. You're talking something about Van Gogh.
But Van Gogh and Steve Martin are, like, people that are, like, and Mark Twain, even that, are, like, the quote-unquote, like, fathers of modern, like, culture, art. Like, Van Gogh, the mm-hmm. father of modern art. Steve Martin basically is the father of, like, alt comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether you like it or not. And even that being said, we were talking about Mark Twain a little bit earlier. He is the father of American literature. They didn't set out and they're like, oh, I have to be the most original thing. Like, oh, I've got to do something different. They just did themselves.
Yeah, like Lenny Bruce being, like, the father of stand-up in some way. Like, all stand-up in the sense that, like, he just started talking on stage. He was just himself. I mean, nobody...
Absolutely.
I don't think many people actually like going back and listening to to Lenny Bruce because it's kind of long and rambling. But it was himself.
He's also a heroin addict. So, like, right. let's remember that.
But so was Philip Seymour Hoffman. So, and so was...
And he was great. And, like,
Keith Richards. So.
Oh, no, I have no problem with heroin. I have no problem at all with heroin. I have a
problem. You don't have any problems with heroin? I got a couple problems with heroin.
Well, I have a heroin problem. Does that count?
Yikes.
That's why I don't do it anymore.
Yikes.
And when you love something so much, you let it go.
For real? Damn.
Yeah. I've kicked more habits than rocks.
I've kicked a few in my time. That wasn't one I ever had to encounter. Thankfully, I'm so thankful that you're here with us. I mean, that was always what was crazy, and what me and a lot of my friends have assumed about heroin. It's just like it has to be an amazing feeling. I mean, there's no other way. Knowing how, like, the track record of what happens to people who go through it.
I mean, yeah, like, well, my thing was like, oh, I don't know how we got here. Oh, I do, because me. Well, I mean, they call it chasing the dragon for a reason. Who would ever chase a dragon?
Yeah, that's insane.
You run from a dragon. Like,
that's a great point.
If J.R.R. Tolkien has taught me anything, it's that you run from dragons.
That's hilarious. How, like, have I never thought of that?
You run from a dragon, and they call, oh, man, I'm just chasing that dragon. And then the other thing, like, there's the euphemisms with it. But it
turns
around
and breathes fire on you.
Yeah.
Sorry, the euphemisms.
Like... They're fun with it. I mean, heroin has probably some of the more fun euphemisms and, like, lingo. Because literally when you're about to inject, you call it tying off a dinosaur.
Really?
I loved dinosaurs as a kid.
Oh, man.
Rawr.
Oh, my God.
Like, but
I'm so glad you're past that, man.
Well, I mean, it was never IV. I don't know if that makes it better. It still doesn't make it better. I'm still glad you're...
But I mean, you know, that's
the thing is that's also that plays into storytelling is like, yeah, these situations weren't great. Emphatically, yay. But me going through it, because like if you go to an AA meeting, yeah, you'll hear some wild stories, but they're all like, I sucked and I had to stop. It's like, yeah, you did. Like, you weren't good at what you were doing, so you had to quit. I'm glad you did. I'm glad you learned. But that's not, like, it's not a teaching thing. I feel like a lot of times with addiction and stuff like that, because I am addicted to storytelling. I most certainly am, without a doubt. Like, 5 stars. I am addicted to it. Like, anybody that'll listen to me spin a yarn, and I'll make you make me spin a yarn. I will. If we're sitting at a bar and, like, you know, I come clean to you or whatever, oh, tell me a story. No, I won't. If you sit around me long enough, you'll hear me tell a story. But it's that thing where you have to have control over it.
Right.
Because the whole point, like, just, you can be a big mouth or you can be able to tell a story. I have a big mouth, but it's one of those things where if you hear someone tell a story as a storyteller, and Joe, you know how much I fucking hate to use storytelling and storyteller and all that, like, just that lingo. It feels antiquated. But as a storyteller, which I do pride myself in being, I can spin a yarn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm good. Even when I'm bad, I'm still one of the better you've ever seen touch.
You're an amazing storyteller. You're hilarious.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. Flattery will get you everywhere.
especially with the whole book.
Oh, especially. Oh, that compliment cash. It's like angels giving me kisses. Ooh, it feels good. I'm in the money. Anyways, but as a storyteller and someone who, like, and Joe, you do this really, really well, and something that I really, really admire in you is, like, you'll go out, because remember one of the assignments, you had the assignment of, like, go and listen to somebody else tell a story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you came back, and, like, you were one of the most excited people about it, because, like, you could relay that story by just hearing it.
And I loved it. You also asked us to retell, to re-describe the plot of one of our favorite movies, and I described the plot of Inside Out, which is, you know, a whole movie about feelings.
And we watched that clip from when Bongo...
Bing Bong. Yeah, dies and sacrifices himself. Very Jesus-like, you know.
See? Like, that's the thing, is exactly, and...
Spoiler alert for Inside Out.
And you did the same joke when you brought it into class. And
did I?
Love that. Yeah, you were like, so spoiler alert, guys. And it's like, just tell the damn story. And, like, the people that hadn't seen Inside Out, like, I made Joe tell the story of Inside Out. And
still is one of my favorite movies.
It's still a great movie. It's fucking phenomenal. It's great, because that's the same thing, is it has a lot of the same principalities and character arcs that the Bible does.
Well, and also, as far as it relates to storytelling, it's so perfect, because what happens in the basic gist of it, I mean, this isn't...
Spoiler alert.
Another spoiler alert, but, you know, whatever. It, like, the basic gist of it is that the main human character in it suffers depression. Well, because there's human characters and there's, like, the emotional characters that are, you know what I'm saying. There's sadness, joy, whatever. The girl, she suffers depression. Why does she have depression? Because she doesn't want to talk about why she's sad. She doesn't want to talk about what she's going through with anybody. And that's when you try to, when you don't tell all of your story, when you leave things untold, when you feel unheard, parts of your personality start to wither, because you can't just have one or the other. You can't just have one part of yourself validated. It's the whole thing, baby, or it's none of it.
Have you ever read the Le Petit Prince?
Le Petit Prince? Oh, oui.
Oui?
Je parle un peu de français. J'ai took some in high school and forgot a lot of it. But yeah, if you took French in high school, you pretty much have to
lead. Un petit peu.
I had to do a whole thing on it. Now I can't remember much of it.
Well,
enlighten me.
So one of my favorite, of course, you're going to hear me quote this, same thing with, like, Pagliacci walking into the bar. The
little saddest clown name, by the way. Like, imagining, there's something even more tragic about a clown named Pagliacci having fallen from grace.
The world famous.
Right, the world famous Pagliacci.
He's the world famous. Like, he's the best to ever touch it.
Pagliacci.
Yeah. Il Pagliacci. Yeah. The great. The great.
Put some respect on that name.
Put some respect on my name.
Anyway, Le Petit Prince.
So he comes across on one of the planets a drunk, and he says, and I love this book for so many different reasons, because he encounters so many different people, and, like, they each share their story. Like, literally, he goes to different worlds and sees different people, and once again, I believe it's a clown, probably, knowing me. It's the drunk, and the prince stumbles upon the drunk, and he says, well, why do you keep drinking? And the drunk says, oh, because I'm embarrassed or I'm anxious. And he says, well, why are you embarrassed? Why are you anxious? And he says, because I'm a drunk. Mm. And that's the thing, is like literature and stories and all that stuff, and even the fun stuff, like we're talking about Inside Out. People talk about the lowest common denominator. Like, I love fart jokes. Nothing is funnier to me than a fart. Because they're like snowflakes. Each one is different, and they're all beautiful.
And you don't want to be caught in a whole bunch of them.
No, you don't. You definitely do not. You definitely do not. But that's the thing, is like, the things that we're embarrassed about are the most relatable things.
Yeah.
And that's what I love most about storytelling, is if you do have, and I rarely call myself brave, but like, if you do share that, like, because the woe is me, Joe is me stuff, still, that's you being vulnerable and like other people reaching out and like, yeah, the badger, I see it. And that's the thing, is like, you share a piece of you unlike any other form of art, because it's you on display. It's not like you behind a piano, which is also great. I wish I knew how to play. It's not you, like, watching people others see your art, or, like, you watching a movie, or, like, whatever it is. It's just you and them. But at the same time, it's us.
Yeah, and do you ever worry, because I,
does that make sense?
Yeah. I worry about myself, and I worry about you too. I do.
Please don't.
Do you ever worry that the story we tell ourselves about ourselves can be really hard to break? And by telling a story over and over, it reinforces a certain narrative. And whether it's, I mean, that happens a lot with addictions, where it's like, and that's honestly, that's one reason I don't personally love 12-step programs, is because I think when you're trying to kick it, it still reinforces this narrative of like, I'm broken, I'm sick, I'm hurt. Whereas for me, it was more successful to kick those by saying like, I'm whole, I'm healed, I'm, by changing my story and by saying, I might not be an alcoholic, but that also doesn't mean I need alcohol anymore. Just one example of something. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, do you ever worry about that?
No, I absolutely do. And that's one of the things that I probably drifted away from, the point that you were making earlier. I feel like addiction is something that we all go through. Everybody. Everybody's addicted to something. Even if it's woodworking. Like,
pretty awesome addiction.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You get a lot of chairs. Well, you just have far too many chairs.
You say that now until you have to start stacking in the kitchen, and then you don't have any room for activities.
You can't. You just, how sad it is to be a woodwork addict and have never be able to throw a dinner party big enough for all the chairs you've made.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and now you have to start catering weddings, but nobody wants to come to Brevard.
You're the Pagliacci, the woodworker.
No, Pagliacci's successful.
The famous word woodworking Pagliacci.
I think his name is Frank Lloyd Wright.
Well, he was pretty successful, too.
So was Pagliacci. He was world famous.
Sorry, I totally didn't put respect on the Pagliacci.
You better. You better. But, I totally agree to that wholeheartedly, as somebody who's beaten other addictions. Like, I may still be an addict, but, Lord, if you would have told me at 22 that I would be almost 34 sitting here talking to you, and someone that I think that I've maybe helped, like, find your voice, tell your story, like,
definitely, yeah,
that to me is astounding. Because like, me at 22, oh, what are your favorite things? Oh, I like to crush up OxyContin and cocaine and like bang bang it. No, like, I would never have believed that. But through storytelling, and also like helping people through storytelling, like, you run so far. Like, I felt like Wile E. Coyote forever, just because you know how he runs off the cliff, but he keeps running into thin air.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that's what I was doing, chasing that roadrunner. And that's hilarious. But like, that's what I was doing is just trying to run off the cliff as fast as I can so that I don't look down. And the great thing that storytelling and like also learning from that is just I'm tired. Like, but now like I get close to the cliff and I look back and I stop and I'm like, hey, don't go, like, because I know it's gonna fall. It's like that thing where he always has the jackhammer or whatever and he's like, oh, I'm gonna get you now, and then he saws it off or right. whatever, and then it's him that falls. That's how I felt right. forever, like with stand up and performing and
people sawing off your bridge and
yeah exactly. But the thing that especially like that I think I'm against with 12-step programs is they try and make you feel bad about your story and about your life. Mm. And like, oh, tell this story about like what you don't regret. I don't believe in that. Like, tell a story that you enjoy, but look at what you enjoy outside of just the addiction.
And what is your addiction preventing you from? What joys is it preventing you from? I mean, for me, I created, like, through the Smart Recovery Program, which I wholeheartedly endorse, which uses, like, it's a secular program. There's no mention, you don't have to, there's no higher power stuff in it, which is fine. I that part I don't even mind about AA, but the, it just has psychological tools, cognitive behavioral therapy tools designed in it. And part of it is like creating a pros and cons list. It's not about creating your story. It's saying, like, what are the good parts of drinking or whatever it was? And you'd be like, just honestly list, like, these are the things I enjoy. But then if you just have to honestly answer each part of this quadrant, and you're like, well, what's the cons of drinking? Then you list all the cons that you know, and you really have to be honest with it. And then you say, well, what are the cons of not drinking? Because you got to be honest about that, too. There's going to be a sacrifice or whatever it is, drinking or, you know, any addiction. I mean, for me, it was weed. It was sex addiction for various times. You know, it's been all kinds of different things for me, too. And you listed, like, I am going to miss, you know, the random hookup with somebody. I'm going to miss like that feeling, that thrill of the ego of, I am going to miss sparking up at a Phish concert, you know, whatever it is. But then you list, what are the pros of leaving that behind? And you go, oh, right. Fulfillment, integrity, you know, more time, energy, and fucking money, you know? And you start realizing like, oh, the pros of leaving this addiction behind, they don't negate the pros of doing it, but they just, your soul just sings at feeling how much more resonant those pros of leaving your addictions behind and how much it really speaks and serves your higher self.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that, and Joe, literally, like, from your lips to God's ears, we'll do that.
Satan, too. Satan can listen
to. Oh, yeah, please. Oh, God.
Satan probably needs to hear.
Yeah, well, okay. First of all, you go to hell for the company, you go to heaven for the climate. It's and also heat rises, so remember that. Anyways, but that's the thing is a lot of times with addiction and recovery, they force you and it's like, oh, we just take your addiction and push it onto something new, and that's not okay. And what you were saying is okay. I love that notion because that's one thing that I thought about. Like, I've kicked a lot of shit that I had a lot of problems with, and it's just like, no, I'm done.
I mean, I've like kicked, Forrest Gump at the end of a run.
Yeah, like, no, I'm done. Like, I did it. I had a good run. Like, I did the same thing with, like,
I'm tired now.
Yeah, I'm tired now. Like, exactly. I'm tired now. I want to go home. And literally quotes like, I've done that with synthetic opiates. I did that with heroin. I've done that with, like, rowdy powder before. I did it with benzos. I did it with, like, several other things where it's just like, no, okay, I'm done. And what you're saying about, like, the pros and cons is definitely great. But also the thing about that I wish were more, I guess, infectious is the applauding of it as far as like, oh, I like who you are, instead of being like, oh, you're doing this wrong.
Right.
It's always, everybody always has like a finger to point, especially with addiction, it's like everybody's holier than thou. Okay, I could be addicted to, like, driving fast, which I was in high school. Now I don't have a car. Beat that addiction. Got him. Kobe. But, like, everybody wants to make you feel bad about yourself because they feel bad about something in themselves. When I really, and I am an awful human being, and you know that.
No, I don't know that.
Oh, LOL. Emphatically, yay. But the thing is I really wish, because we're in generation face down right now. Everybody's looking at their phone. Like, and I do it too, and I'm completely responsible as well.
It's all of our addiction.
Yeah, but like the only way that you really can get people's attention is on stage or through entertainment. And the crazy thing now is, like, I hate to say this, but stars, they're just like us. Like, I hate reality TV, but at the same time, I love how they have brought to light human behavior. Like, the Kardashians, emphatically no. That's not human. But also, they are human. And they're a part of our world. And, like, you see Team Mom. And they're going through struggles. And, yeah, they're attention hungry. They're also going through postpartum depression. So, like, give them the screen. All right? Give them the screen or they're going to put their kids in a bag and throw them off a bridge.
Jesus Christ.
Our Lord and Savior, bless up. R.I.P. But, like, that's the thing. Is, like, we're now in a time of like, you can't have this, yet we show John and Kate plus 8. And their story needs to be heard. And they went through a divorce after getting embryonic in vitro, like, treatments to have octuplets.
Yeah.
Like, goddamn. Like, you couldn't make that work because why? Oh, because you got what you wanted. Okay, that's people.
Yeah.
They're both shitty human beings, but shitty human beings, I come across 5 an hour. And I only meet 7 people an hour. And I'm one of these shitty people. But people, hey, they're just like stars. Mm. Like, why not watch John, whatever his name is, be some asshole shitbird father?
Well, I mean, I know what you're saying. I don't like saying anybody's shitty. I know what you're saying.
I got that badger now. That badger's coming out.
I don't think you're shitty. I don't even think John and Kate are shitty. I mean, we all got issues. We all got.
That's fair, and flaws. I don't know their story, and you're right.
And I just got hot. No, you're fine. And I know what you're saying. I know what, like, don't mean to be the party fucking pooper here, but, like, you know, and, like,
how are you the party pooper when I was like, fuck them. They had kids. I don't mean to be a good job.
I'm just saying, I don't need to be Sister Mary being like, now let's watch how we talk about ourselves. But that, you know, to an extent, I do think language is important to, like, watch how we. It does frame, and I don't know. I don't think any of us are shitty.
You're absolutely right.
I definitely don't think you're shitty, man.
Well, we've met. I don't know if you met John and Kate.
I mean, I've met old Buck.
Yeah, you met old Buck. You know he's shitty. I haven't met John or Kate, and I don't know that they're shitty. Also, I do know that they did that, and they do provide a good life for the kids.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the most important thing. Like, the way the two groups of people that we treat the worst are criminals and kids. And we treat them the same.
Yep.
We treat them the exact same. What do you get? What's the meal you get when you go to jail? It's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and an orange juice. What do you get when you go to grade school lunch? Peanut butter jelly sandwich and an orange juice or a milk, depending on your choice. And you get an apple for dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not allowed to leave.
No. We're about out of time.
Oh, thank God. I'm so sorry.
No, thank God. How dare you? How dare you?
You're right. Praise Allah.
I feel as offended as Derek right now. Old Derek. Ancient old Derek.
Old with a D.
Our great to the 10,000th degree Derek. Great grandfather Derek.
He did kill a cougar with a stick, though.
That is pretty impressive.
I mean, I would tell people about that. Are you kidding me?
I would tell everybody. You know, I mean... That's where mansplaining, that's where all this shit comes from, is just being like, I gotta tell you this. Let me tell you what I did. Check this out.
Y'all never gonna believe this.
Y'all never gonna believe this.
I love that line. That's y'all ain't gonna believe this. Okay, so, and I can see Derek, obviously, in the Appalachian Mountains.
Thank you.
Coming back into the fire.
From Brevard.
Yeah, from Brevard. Be like, y'all ain't gonna believe this shit. I just took a stick, and I killed a coot, a mountain lion. A mountain lion.
With my bare hands.
With
and
my bare
hands. And the stick.
I can't wait for Daniel Boone to show up. Fuck oh, that my guy. God.
Well, Buck, thank you so much for everything you've done for me, and thank you for coming over. Do you have anything, like, you don't want to plug anything, do you? I mean, you can plug anything. I mean, I usually ask people to plug. I just felt like you would be like, no, I don't want to plug anything.
I mean, I don't, but I need to. Buckball.org.
Okay. Buckball. Yeah, check it out.
That's a website. Also, Buckball. It's 8 letters, 2 syllables. Find me on Facebook or Instagram. Picture_me_ballin. Hit me up. I teach storytelling classes, and also, I want to watch your story. Please. Thank you.
Definitely. If you're in Los Angeles, you should definitely look into one of his workshops. I mean, unless... I don't know if I'm the best endorsement for it, but you know, take other people's word for it. Anyway, Buck, I love
you.
Joe
is great.
I love you, man. Thank you.
I love you too, Joe. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you all.
And that's the show. Thank you once again to Buck Ball for coming on the show and for teaching me everything I know about storytelling. Find more old episodes on the website or on your stream. Go to a live show. The next one is on October 7th. You can find more info on the Facebook page. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being who you are. I love you. Jamaste.
Hey, clams. It's Lindsay and Angela. Welcome to the Clam Bake.
You know, the opposite of a sausage fest.
We explore what it means to be a feminist today.
We're coming back from our post-season one hiatus with a very special live show as part of the LA Film Festival, and we'd love to see you there.
It's Tuesday, September 25th at 7:30 p.m., and there are going to be trucker hats given out. Get ready to win.
Woohoo! So join us in some much-needed patriarchy smashing live Tuesday, September 25th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available online at filmindependent.org.
Can't wait to see you there. Bye, clams.
Bye.
Campfire.